So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Man.
Welcome to Atlanta, jacking hammers and bows. Back to the mackin' and jacking the clothes. Adolescent packing a foe. A knock on the door.
Who is it?
I would happen to know. The one with the flow.
Who did it?
It was me, I suppose. JD in the rolls and looters in the cut supreme. Skating down old Nat, got tucked and lean. I split your spleen. As a matter of fact, I split your team. No blood on the sneaks. Gotta keep it so my kicks is clean. I get the cream. Cops see me flick my beams. I'm allergic to doc prescribed and a histamine.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Review Away with John Pollock and Wei Ting. Wei, how are you doing today?
Pretty well. Yeah.
Our evolution continues, Wei, in trying to make this podcast sound as good as possible. So if anyone notices the volume levels and how our voices sound, please also leave feedback about that as well. We want to get your critiquing of our podcast.
Did you get some complaints about last week's show?
No, I didn't. I'm just saying we're always trying to tweak and make it sound a bit better. So I'm hoping that this... this works. We've had a long running history of telling people about the facilities we use for this and the drastic differences between that and the law.
Yeah.
On Sundays. So everyone, we are in a broom closet for Review Away.
Yeah.
Every week. It's called our studio. But Wei, we're going to continue our invasion theme here with the July 9th, 2001 edition of Raw is War from Atlanta, Georgia. A logical start point for the invasion, much more so than Tacoma, Washington, as Buff Bagwell pointed out last week.
Yeah, that's right. If you remember last week's episode, we're coming right off of that debacle of a first WCW match between Buff Bagwell and Booker T. So this is the week right after the crowd in the Tacoma Dome completely turned on this whole WCW brand. And this is how the WWF reacted.
Yes, this is the reaction show. This was after Vince McMahon, basically after that night's Raw, threw out all the plans for WCW. He threw out the plan. There was one plan at a point to make Raw into Nitro on Spike TV, which all of this was thrown out the window after that Tacoma edition of Raw, which is why that show was such a gigantic failure, which I will address during the feedback. And we have a ton of feedback today, everyone. We're going to get to lots of that.
I would just like to think about, you know, the mindset of that locker room or the creative booking room. You know, like, how desperate must they have been to accept any good ideas after that failure of the WCW?
Well, we're going to find out, Wei. We start off the show with a recap of why you shouldn't take Diamond Dallas Page seriously at all from SmackDown last week. Now, Wei, I'm sure both of us watched this SmackDown when it occurred, but I had no clue of any memory of this. But we see from SmackDown, the WCW crew attacks The Undertaker 6-on-1 until Shane McMahon makes the save for The Undertaker and gets in the face of Booker T. Booker then attacks Shane, and then the WCW crew attack Shane and then lay out Booker T.
Yeah, wasn't it DDP that attacked Shane?
That's right. It was DDP,
yeah,
I think.
It was DDP.
Because I'm trying to think here. This makes absolutely zero sense. You're right. It was DDP that attacked Shane. So what we got out of this is that Shane McMahon is now a babyface who owns the heel WCW.
Yes. All the stars in WCW except Booker T, perhaps, is a heel, except him and Shane McMahon. Does that make sense?
No, none of this makes sense, but that's not because of the way you're explaining it. It's because these guys were bought out by Shane McMahon. They have no avenue for employment except through Shane McMahon, through out of his good heart, bought this company without any television, and picked up these contracts, and these guys, clinging to a thread to stay in this industry, attack that thread in Shane McMahon.
Yeah.
Why would they attack Shane? I don't give a shit what he does to you. They have no job without him.
All that aside,
it would make sense later. I understand.
I know, but I mean, all that aside, even, like, what's the worst part about it is that, as a fan, you have no idea who to cheer for.
No, Booker T, I don't understand what he is here.
Yeah.
Because he was laid out by WCW, yet on this show, he was portrayed as a heel.
add the fact that you have the boss of supposedly the face company, WWF, being the biggest heel of all, Vince McMahon.
We are angry about this show, and all we have talked about is the recap from the previous Thursday's SmackDown. We're not even at the opening theme song. Oh, this is going to be a good one, folks. Believe me. Raw kicks off, as we mentioned, from Atlanta, Georgia at the Phillips Arena. And they announced that tonight on the show, a street fight between Shane McMahon and Diamond Dallas Page and
the first ever WCW-WWF interpromotional match featuring
The Undertaker and no one against Lance Storm and Mike Awesome.
So the logic here is one WWF star equals two WCW stars.
That's the incentive right there. And we're going to kick things off with the street fight. Shane McMahon comes out, but then instead of Diamond Dallas Page's theme hitting, The Undertaker comes out with Sarah to the tune of Rollin' by Limp Bizkit. And he says that he wants Diamond Dallas Page tonight, and Shane is happy to back off. And then DDP comes out with a chair, and how did this work? He attacked Undertaker?
They actually had a bit of a match, which I was astounded that they would even do, because this was your big match. This was your
This
payout.
Was not even a match, everyone.
No,
this
it was not a match.
It was basically The Undertaker beating the shit out of DDP for 90 seconds until Taker went for a choke slam, but Shane then attacks Undertaker with a kendo stick, and Taker makes his comeback and attacks Shane. So we're to assume that the beatdown on SmackDown and this street fight were all designed to trick The Undertaker.
Yeah.
They were like, okay, Shane, we're going to beat the fuck out of you with the knowledge that The Undertaker will want to interrupt your street fight that you're going to book on Raw before DDP comes out, turn the match around, and then when The Undertaker is distracted, you will hit him with a kendo stick. This will all work out to our plan.
Because guys come out to interrupt street fights and take other people's places all the time.
What if Taker was just... Yeah, I'm going to watch these two beat the fuck out of each other in a street fight, and I'll get Paige after the match.
They would have been
that fucked. Was a hell of a lot they were assuming would happen here. So, nonetheless...
So Shane McMahon turns heel.
Yes, Shane McMahon is a heel with WCW. DDP makes the save for Shane with a chair to The Undertaker. Then Sarah comes in and attacks Shane with a kendo stick, and DDP delivers a diamond cutter to Sarah, one of which was maybe... the most horrid-looking diamond cutter I've ever seen somebody take. Sarah, as she went down, was like the downward dog position she was going down in, and looked like her back snapped when she hit the canvas.
Mm.
This was terrible looking.
Yeah.
Jim Ross is disgusted by this, and can't believe Diamond Dallas Page would do such a thing to a woman.
I can't believe it either.
And then Ross notes, "I'm disgusted by this. Let's see a replay."
I can't believe it either, because DDP is perhaps the most awkward guy to choose in this role. I do not think of him as a heel, first of all, much less a woman beater. This is the guy who tagged with Carl Malone. No, he's
none of that matters. Way, Heyman adds, "The ring is no place for a housewife." Backstage, Shane is telling DDP to leave on the Undertaker's motorcycle, and. As DDP is starting the motorcycle, it won't take off, and then Shane on live TV has to point out the kickstand is down. And then DDP's like, oh, and kicks it up. And then for the first 100 meters, he's just going with his feet.
They've had such bad luck with the
motorcycle. Why this would not be a pre-tape, I don't know.
But they've had bad luck with motorcycles in all their... anytime they've tried to use one in the WWF. Remember like when Hogan tried to take Undertaker... All right, what happened? It was Undertaker trying to run up... Oh, wait, Hogan tried to drive his motorcycle up the ramp to get at Taker one show, and then he went up halfway and then trickled back down.
I remember one angle they did with Hogan and The Undertaker where Undertaker tied Hulk Hogan up to his motorcycle and then drove him up and all the way backstage outside.
Oh.
And it was all these quick camera cuts to different rooms, and Hogan was just being dragged on a motorcycle.
That was awesome, actually.
I think it was in Toronto as well.
We've got to do some of those shows.
Fantastic. Up next, we have... Oh, sorry. And Sarah's taken away in an ambulance, and they state she has neck damage. The Dudley Boys against the APA is up first, with the Dudley Boys defending the Tag Team Championship. They recap SmackDown, where Spike Dudley was delivering... Is it the Dudley Dog? Is that what it was called? The acid drop? And as he landed, he broke his leg. Broke his tibia. And the Dudleys, of course, in the middle of this taped show, continued the match and gave Spike a 3D on his broken leg.
Well, he had that table to land on, of course. Okay.
They announced during this match, Farouk has a minor elbow injury, and his entire arm was covered in black, and then he had a glove on as well. It didn't look like a minor elbow injury. They talk about Sarah. JR says that she did what any woman would do for the love of her man, which I can buy that for just about any character except The Undertaker. In an angle where his woman would do anything for the man she loves, The Undertaker.
Him and Heyman and Jer were just, I thought they were perfect in their roles. Heyman justifies DDP attacking Sarah because he says Sarah attacked Shane first. I just thought the two worked very well together.
We saw a spinebuster by Farouk onto Devon. Bubba makes the save, but Farouk moves his elbow moves out of the way for an elbow drop by Bubba onto Devon. Then Spike runs down and he hits Bubba with his crutch, and this allows Bradshaw to hit Devon with the clothesline from hell, and the APA win the tag team championship. Way
huge build up to this win.
Yeah, this was just two teams thrown together and we did a title change. Backstage, Vince McMahon, Steve Austin, and Deborah are in their locker room, and Vince is talking about whatever, and Austin repeats everything Vince says. Kurt Angle then arrives wearing a ridiculous looking cowboy hat and presents everyone except for Deborah with gifts, and Austin and Vince get badges, and then Angle bought himself a big gold badge to indicate that he's the sheriff.
Yes, that's right. Listen, I think, like I said last week, I thought these are funny. These guys have good comedic timing, and I think they're funny together, but
sure,
it's too long. And
these are your main event guys.
You do make a good point. Comedy does not draw money.
And this Kurt Angle, you want to talk about guys that were booked just ridiculously on this show? Kurt Angle, and we'll get to that later. Austin starts breaking Angle's balls about last week, saying that he got his ass kicked by Booker T last week, and he should go challenge Booker for a match tonight for the WCW title, and basically goads Angle into challenging Booker. Up next, Intercontinental title on the line.
Actually,
Way.
Before that, we get a tease. Kane is walking into the arena in full getup and his wrestling bag. So obviously, you know, this is Kane. He walks around everywhere in his tights and that mask.
Yep.
And JR teases that we're going to hear Kane's reaction to knowing what happened to his sister-in-law, Sarah. It's just so funny thinking about
these guys as real people outside of wrestling.
This ridiculous man who wears his see-through tights and a mask all the time.
Has a sister-in-law.
He has a sister-in-law. As if, like, the laws of society apply to this man.
Oh, if they were in the habit of just doing comedy with main eventers, they totally should have done like a mock wedding with The Undertaker and Sarah, with Kane as the best man.
It's Kane's sister-in-law, yeah.
Comes out and like does pyro
Kane
at the
doing,
wedding.
Yeah, Kane filling out tax reports.
He has to bring out a date to the wedding.
Yeah.
They get hammered afterwards.
I just want to see a show of Kane doing regular everyday things, like his laundry and, I don't know.
There's a lot you could do with Kane.
Yeah.
Albert versus Rhino for the Intercontinental title. Albert comes out, so that means...
Yo, you dealing with the X Factor.
I got everything I ever wanted, and I'll never give that back.
Yo.
Oh, I know you hate the X Factor, but you ain't gotta look at me like that. I said you ain't gotta look at me like that.
Cracker Way, the first of two times we would get him on this show tonight. Once again...
I completely forgot that not only were these guys on every Raw, they weren't even on Heat. They were on Raw multiple times. They also had titles. X-Pac was the light heavyweight
champion
at the time.
They were pushed.
Albert was the IC title champion at the time.
Sadly, by the end of tonight, X-Factor would be broken up. But unfortunately, this song would continue.
Oh my God.
Paul Heyman was just throwing out nickname after nickname for Albert during this match, including the Moil of Misery. What is a moil, Wei?
Guy who does circumcisions. Did you know that? You probably didn't.
Are you being serious?
I'm being absolutely serious.
That's a guy.
That's what a moil is. The
So the guy who is nicknamed Prince Albert is giving a nickname about a guy who delivers circumcisions.
Sure.
This guy's gimmick was just penis jokes.
Yeah.
I really didn't know what a moil was.
Well, you didn't know what a circumcision was.
What? What
for
is
the longest time?
The Cantor of Chaos. Isn't cantor a cantor like a singer at church? Yeah, it is. That's what a cantor is.
All right.
But
well,
he sings about chaos.
Why not?
Cain singing about chaos. That would be... Maybe Cain's spinoff series. Maybe that can be a future contest.
Yeah.
Albert used Samoa Joe's Ole kick way before Samoa Joe.
No.
Oh, yeah.
He's using Otani's kick.
I guess.
All right.
I guess this was against the ropes. Albert then did a springboard drop kick into the back of Rhino's head. Another Shinjiro Otani spot.
All right.
Did you believe me there? You did not do a springboard drop kick into the back of Rhino's head.
I wasn't
watching.
You're
just nodding your head.
I wasn't watching too closely. I was like, all right. If he did, that's good for him.
The referee was distracted and X-Pac came in for a super kick, but Rhino kicked out. Splash off the top by Rhino for a two count. Then Rhino missed a gore to Albert. Rhino countered with... This seems wrong. Rhino... Oh, sorry. Rhino counters a Baldo bomb attempt, the worst name for a finish I've ever heard, and then gores X-Pac in the ring, but walks into a Baldo bomb for the win. And Albert retains the Intercontinental title in the most surreal IC title run in WWE history.
Oh, my God.
Albert. I'm sure there's been some shittier champions since that time, but I don't want to go back and look. He was one that everyone always thought this guy would eventually become something really solid, but I don't know.
But he's doing very well in Japan.
Yes, yep, he is.
But again, you know, they're just throwing these title fights out there. They're just giving these away. They had so many titles at the time.
Every match soon became title matches.
Yeah,
during this invasion angle.
What did
because you had double the titles?
Yeah, and what did? Well, even without double the titles, you had the hardcore title. You had too many. What did Rhino do to deserve a title shot? First of all, he just fought that hardcore match last week, didn't he? That I don't even know if he won. But yeah, not much of a match, in my opinion.
Backstage, Booker T is in the locker room without any lighting, and Kurt Angle comes in to challenge him, and here's Kurt Angle's promo, making him the biggest dork on this show.
Hey, Booker. Booker T, if that is your real name. You know, I never had a chance to formally introduce myself since you bashed me in the head with your title last week on SmackDown like a coward. But I'm Kurt Angle. Olympic gold medalist.
Hey, Booker T, WCW champion. How you doing?
How am I doing? I'll tell you how I'm doing. I'm pretty peed off right now. You cheap shot at me last week, and tonight you're going to pay. I want you tonight, one-on-one, for the WCW title. You know, you may have got me once, but I'm a dangerous man. A very dangerous man. So what do you say?
You want to fight?
Yeah.
Tonight?
Oh, yeah.
You got one.
All right.
Hey, Kurt, by the way, what that cute little hat you had on last week? You really think you got a chance against me, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, Mother Hubbard.
So there we have it, everyone. Kurt Angle versus Booker T tonight for the WCW Championship in, I guess, what will be the new first ever interpromotional match because we're getting two interpromotional matches tonight.
Mm. Yippee-ki-yay, Mother Hubbard.
This was a guy that in 2 weeks would be the top babyface in the WWF. Fuck. Then we go to William Regal, who's in Tajiri's office. Tajiri screams and hides when Kane walks in. And Kane states he'll take the spot of The Undertaker tonight in the handicap match with Lance Storm and Mike Awesome because The Undertaker have been overwrought with guilt and has gone to the hospital with his wife, Sarah Undertaker. Which is what they eventually started calling her, Sarah Undertaker.
Yeah. Sarah Taker.
Up next, we have Jeff Hardy and The Big Show, stemming from last week's angle where Big Show got in Trish's face and called her You stupid bitch! So that set up this match. Mm-hmm. Jeff Hardy, on the way to the ring, was wearing a red mesh shirt, Way.
Yeah.
Looked very weird.
No.
And Jim Ross called him the 23-year-old risk-taking bachelor, enamoring him with the male group.
Oh, my God.
The 23-year-old risk-taking bachelor. Big Show immediately tears up Hardy's red mesh shirt, which already made the thumbs-up match for me. Then Trish Stratus comes down to ringside. Hardy goes for a seated senton off the top rope, but Show catches him and tosses him with a flapjack move into the mat. Clean win over Jeff Hardy right away. This was a squash.
It was.
Then Stratus comes in and makes out with Jeff, and instantly Hardy's music plays. And then they do a replay of the kiss.
No, yeah, I gotta say, I mean, I know girls love Jeff Hardy and everything, but it's just so awkward for me to see Jeff Hardy.
Jeff Hardy is the last person you want to see. And, like, part of Jeff's appeal was to a female audience. Yeah. Does that female audience want to see him making out with some other chick?
I think they would want to see Jeff Hardy involved in some sort of love angle.
I don't know. It worked with Matt Hardy and Lita, but for Jeff, very awkward, as you said.
Yeah, like, Jeff Hardy, to me, has always been ambiguous character.
All right. Define ambiguous, Way.
Well, you're just not sure.
He's, what's a good term to use for him? It would be, I don't know, not making out with women on the show. Let's say that.
Okay.
I don't know where we're going with this.
I don't know either.
This was a weird angle. And I don't recall this going anywhere. I didn't even remember this.
No, I don't think so either.
So then we go backstage, and your two top talents are Kurt Angle and Steve Austin, with Angle stretching as his ass is in Steve Austin's face. And Vince is emphasizing how important it is for Angle to win the WCW title from Booker T. Angle and Austin argue over who the leader for Team WWF should be at the pay-per-view, and they argue using the Skipper and Gilligan analogies from Gilligan's Island. The one funny line in this was Kurt asking Vince if he was a fan of Gilligan's Island, and Vince responded, "Before my time."
Huh.
That was funny. Vince says that both men will be on Team WWF along with The Undertaker, and then Chris Jericho comes in to address the rumor that he was going to leave for the WCW promotion if he won the title at King of the Ring. He stated, "I work there and I never want to go back, and I want to be on Team WWF." Austin turns him down, and this time it's Angle that's repeating everything that Austin says, as if they're playing ventriloquists. I guess the creative team was enamored with these two and their comedy together, yeah. But this was, it was just second by second, the Stone Cold Steve Austin character was dying.
That is true. That I do
with
agree
every with. Passing segment.
And it was just made more difficult for me to accept, because Kurt Angle and Austin, they would be these serious characters backstage. Then they would have their matches in, and they would be badasses again.
Kurt Angle was booked as the biggest babyface in the world in his match coming up. And then he's a geek backstage.
Yeah. It's like these guys would have such very, you know, emotional, dramatic wins, dramatic performances in the ring. Then you cut to a backstage scene with them, and they're goofy, and they're comedic characters again.
Listen, I'm not against comedy in wrestling. There is a huge place for it, and I think there should be comedy within pro wrestling. But an entire generation of wrestling fans started watching WWF because Stone Cold Steve Austin was the top babyface who feuded with Vince McMahon and didn't take any shit from anybody. It would be like Jack Bauer doing fucking knock-knock jokes on 24. It wouldn't work.
They're trying something different. For me, another thing is that this was all happening within the whole invasion thing. It's just so, too many things going on.
They showed some members of the Atlanta Falcons at ringside, and then they announced that coming up at Invasion, Tori Wilson and Stacy Keibler will take on the team of Lita and Trish Stratus in an interpromotional bra and panties match, Way.
Mm-hmm.
Then they go to WWF New York, where Matt Hardy and Lita are there, and this was funny. Matt was wearing the accompanying black mesh shirt that was see-through, and Lita could not hear Jim Ross asking the first question. Very awkward exchange, and then Matt Hardy totally saved Lita on the spot by basically cutting her promo for her.
Yeah, exactly.
And inside WWF New York, there you see Matt Hardy and Lita. And we're going to hear from Stacey Keibler and Tori Wilson in a few moments. But Lita, what are your thoughts on this first ever Bra and Panties tag team match?
Your thoughts?
You know, I'll accept the challenge. They are absolutely.
You know, Lita doesn't have a problem facing Stacey Keibler or Tori Wilson in any kind of match, let alone the first ever Bra and Panties tag team match. Our only concern is Trish Stratus. We don't know if she can be trusted. Lita doesn't want to team with her, but she will. For one night only, Trish, it's time for you to step up to bat for the WWF and follow the Lita.
Follow the Lita. That's what he said.
I hope he thought of that on the spot. Yeah. If he did, he's my hero. Then we go backstage. Shane McMahon is getting Booker T ready for his match, and they're just jumping up and down, yelling motivational messages to one another. This is very weird. Then we go back to Vince, who's with Austin and Angle. This seemed like the 80th segment with Vince, Austin, and Angle. Austin's repeating everything Vince says to him. This was not even funny after the second time. Angle asks where they were in 1996 and states that he was right here in Atlanta winning a gold medal at the Olympics for his country. And he's going to do the same tonight and win the WCW title. So up next, it's Way, the first ever inter-promotional match.
Yeah, and how many years in the making is this match?
Dozens, Way. Mm-hmm. Going back to the Crockett days.
Yes.
Mid-Atlantic. Oh. Everyone's been waiting for this. Paul Heyman states the ramifications of this match will be felt for years to come. I did not even recall. If Way, you put a gun to my head and asked what was the first ever WWF versus WCW match and my life depended on it, I would not have guessed it was this match. That being said, this match I enjoyed very much. It was probably the best match on the show. Kurt Angle, probably in 2001, was at his pinnacle in terms of working because he wasn't as hurt as he is today. His timing was fantastic. Everything he did, it just looked so smooth. Mm-hmm. And they booked him as the total babyface in this match. He got a visionary submission as Booker tapped, but Nick Patrick is distracted. They then do this really shitty ref bump that leads to Earl Hebner running in for the fall after Angle hits the Angle Slam, but then Nick Patrick pulls Earl Hebner out of the ring. Then we get a spot where Earl Hebner spears Nick Patrick. I'm beginning to regret that I said this was the best match on the show. This booking was terrible, but the two work very well together. Booker then hits Angle with a belt shot, and Charles Robinson comes out of who knows where and counts the pin for the win. Now, logically, I'm just wondering, how did Booker T become a heel? He was a babyface last week with Buff Bagwell. He was attacked by Team WCW on Thursday. Yeah. And I guess just by Shane McMahon turning heel, I guess he was part of the plan.
Yes, because by association. But if you look at the matchup itself, Kurt Angle versus Booker T, Angle is supposed to be a heel here. So I don't know.
But he's booked as a babyface.
Yeah,
How do they want fans to react when you've portrayed him as a dork all night backstage with the heel Steve Austin?
I have no clue. But the fans were clearly cheering for the WWF. They were not cheering for Booker T. They were cheering for Kurt Angle overwhelmingly in this match.
Backstage, the APA are with the Dudleys, and the APA offer them a rematch, saying that they didn't know Spike was going to come in and attack Bubba with the crutch, and they offer them beer at the end of the night, and Bubba says, "Thanks, but why don't you ask us at the end of the night?" So that's the little seed being planted for the big angle coming up. Mm-hmm. And that takes us way to our second ever interpromotional match in history, with Kane taking on the team of Lance Storm and Mike Awesome. The duo came out to maybe the most generic theme music of all time, I would say. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Chris Jericho then comes out of nowhere and announces that he will be teaming with Kane. And the announcers note here that Mike Awesome, who is the hardcore champion, the 24/7 rule has been waived until after the invasion. And then Heyman gets in a dig stating that Awesome is no stranger to controversial title situations, which, as you remember, he left ECW with the WCW title.
Hmm.
And Russo and Bischoff were adamant about him throwing the title into the garbage on Nitro when he debuted. And they ended up avoiding that. And Awesome had to come back and drop the title in a And they were always pissed at Mike Awesome for the way he handled his title situation. Heyman got in a Thrill Seekers reference while Storm and Jericho were working together.
That's right. This was the first time that the two would work together in WWF, perhaps in the entire Big Three, right?
This would have been a cool match for Lance because he's working with Chris Jericho, who he legitimately had his first match with. I think it was a Battle Royal in 1990. And then he's got Paul Heyman calling this match.
I know.
But the...
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, ahead. And then, of course, Mike Awesome, he has the tie-in with ECW and WCW. And even Kane, I think, was working in Smoky Mountain at the same time Lance and Jericho were. So it was a pretty cool, and it's obviously his first match on Raw.
Yes, but I mean, just how much history was there just between these few guys? Yet all we get from it is a quick little blurb from Paul Heyman, who at least mentions it, thank God.
Yeah, I'm sure that was not in the headset for Heyman to say.
We could have had an entire program built on that alone. Jericho versus Lance Storm, how nice would that have been?
Jericho was incredibly over in this match. Jericho went for a lion salt, but Storm got his knees up. Built up to Awesome and Kane getting the hot tags. Jericho came in and put the walls onto Lance Storm as Kane got ready to chokeslam Mike Awesome. But then we got the run-in by Tommy Dreamer and Rob Van Dam making their debut for the promotion. And this leads to the WWF Mid-Carter locker room running out, including Taz, Raven, the Dudley Boys, Justin Credible, and Raven. And they're staring across at these invading talents, Tommy Dreamer and Rob Van Dam, as Kane and Jericho are selling in the other corner. And then the greatest moment of 2001 occurred as the guys turned around. They turned their backs to be aligned with Dreamer and Van Dam. And all of a sudden, we have Team ECW formed. Yes. This was incredible.
Yes, a metaphorical and literal turn.
I cannot say how great this was. They lined up, and it was like the timing was perfect that if you were just watching this, you had just enough time to survey and realize all of these guys were in ECW, so that when they turned, you instantly understood what was occurring here. This wasn't a what-the-fuck moment.
Yeah. This was perhaps the number one moment of the entire Invasion story.
Bar none, the number one moment. Bar none. I remember this, Rob, in particular. I was in Florida at the time on vacation. So I hadn't been on the internet for like the entire week. I knew nothing that was going on. I didn't know if Van Damme and Dreamer were showing up. So I watched this just as like a fan that knew nothing on the internet. And sometimes that is the best way to enjoy wrestling.
It really is. I was actually on vacation too during this. So I missed this episode and I only read about it and I was like, holy shit.
See, that's the difference, Way. Even on vacation, I find a way to watch Raw, which is sad.
But anyway, continue with what happened.
So they turn, they attack Jericho and Kane, and then Jim Ross is asking for answers, and then Paul Heyman says, "You want answers? I'll give you answers." And then Heyman gets up from the booth, comes in, and cuts this incredible promo.
I guess now it's time, JR, that you want the truth. So, JR, tonight, I'm going to give you the whole damn truth. I have been sitting like a damn corporate sellout next to that damn pig. And I have been talking about WWF versus WCW. I have been spilling my guts about this invasion. And it seems to me like everybody has forgotten the Tribe of Extreme. It seems to me like these men were too extreme for WWF versus WCW. It seems to me that this man have left Shane McMahon's WCW. It looks to me like these six men have left Vince McMahon's WWF. It looks to me like they all have joined ECW. So Vince or Shane, anytime you guys want revenge, we'll take on the WWF. We'll take on WCW. We're not hard to find because this invasion just got taken to the extreme.
This promo way, to me, everything they had fucked up before, it was like everything was cleared now. Mm-hmm. You're at ground zero right now, and I will give me something good, and I will reinvest my interest in this invasion, because this promo alone got my interest back. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sadly, this would not last, because unfortunately, this should have ended the show.
This should have.
And people's interest over the next week would have been gigantic of all the possibilities. But no, we still had an hour to go in this show.
But yeah, this is just a fantastic angle. If you just judge it from even the minor details, like using Storm and Mike Awesome, two guys who tagged together in WCW, two guys that also shared that ECW connection, but you didn't even think about that. You're just thinking, okay, Storm and Mike Awesome, Team Canada, they're from WCW. And then bringing in Dreamer and RVD, who were available at the time, and also grabbing the available ECW copyrights. Do you have any details on that? How much do you think they might have paid for something like that?
Well, that's an interesting story, Way, because they did none of that, actually.
Really?
For ECW. They did not technically own the rights to ECW or that theme music, because it was in bankruptcy court at the time. Mm-hmm. And that's why the next week they had to go under the Alliance, and they never could say ECW after this point. It wasn't until 2004, I believe, that they secured the video library and the terms. Mm-hmm. Because in bankruptcy court, it's X amount of time that people can bid on it and before it can be finalized. It wasn't that it was just, Heyman could sell it. He declared bankruptcy, I believe, and could not move the trademarks over. So this was the only time they said ECW. Sure,
but they've used the logo. They were using the logo throughout the entire invasion. They used the logo, they used a theme song too.
I think it was a new... I can't remember what they used after. Are you sure they used those t-shirts and stuff afterwards?
I remember specifically on those posters, they would show the ECW logo, and then Stephanie had always had that little beret type of thing with the ECW logo.
We'll do some research on that this week, but I know that they did not own the term ECW at the time, and therefore that's why you had the shitty name of the Alliance, for the rest of this.
But this whole little turn, this little segment right now, they just made absolutely perfect use of all the available cards that they were dealt, basically. They had all the top ECW stars already on the WWF roster. They had Paul Heyman as a color commentator, the guy who created ECW. As
everything
a color
made sense, that here was this guy that had his own company, it was put out of business, and he had to be sitting there shilling for the WWE all these months, and then he snapped, and he put together this whole plan to take down this company that killed his own. It was a perfect angle to set up.
Yeah.
Like, I had so much more interest in this at this point. Then we go backstage. Vince McMahon and Shane McMahon are together, and they're upset about what just happened, and Shane proposed that they have to work together tonight against ECW. Yes, everyone, on the same night that we were to have the first ever interpromotional match, WWF and WCW were going to team together. Something that should have happened a year after this invasion began was going to happen tonight, and they were each going to put five of their guys together tonight for a historic 20-man tag main event against Team ECW. Up next, Way, X-Pac versus Scotty Too Hotty for the light heavyweight title. Zero interest for this match after that last angle. Scotty goes for the worm. X-Pac leaves the ring. Scotty attempts a sunset flip, but X-Pac grabs the ropes and retains the title.
Our fourth title match of the night. X-Pac had just lost his teammate, just incredible, his best friend, to ECW, yet absolutely zero reaction to that from X-Pac. He just comes out dancing to Uncle Cracker.
We go backstage to the locker room, and Vince and Shane are with Team WWF and Team WCW. So Vince McMahon, feeling the pressure that his company is under siege by ECW, has recruited the APA, Billy Gunn, Hardcore Holly, and The Big Show, three of the five of which have already worked tonight, along with the team of Sean Stasiak, Chuck Palumbo, Mark Jindrak, Sean O'Hare, and Chris Canyon, to work together. These are the 10 guys that are going to save the WWF and WCW brands. Now, I'm questioning here, why is Vince viewing ECW as such a gigantic threat ahead of WCW? Wouldn't he want to vanquish both of these promotions?
Yeah.
Is the idea that, okay, well, we'll team together and then we'll get rid of you at the pay-per-view?
How?
I just don't understand why they're so all of a sudden threatened by ECW that they would work with someone who's supposedly just as much of an enemy.
All right, well, if you're going to look at it that way, how can people simply defect from one brand to another? Do they still get paid by their WWF contracts? Like, would Taz void his contract by jumping to ECW? Can he do that? What about the no-compete clause?
How does losing a fall in a 20-man tag vanquish an entire brand, which is what they were set out to do tonight? Are they going to attack them so much that they won't come back to work next week?
I don't know. I don't know how that would vanquish it, because Kurt Angle already lost to Booker T today.
Does that mean Kurt Angle is vanquished?
That means WCW technically should have won the invasion. That was the first.
Why didn't WCW just leave after that? It's like, we beat your guy, we're leaving now, we have nothing to prove. Shane agrees to lead the charge tonight, and that leads us to Team WWF and Team WCW teaming together to take on Team ECW. Right at the start, WWF and WCW teams cannot agree on anything, and they start attacking one another, and WWF just destroys the WCW team, throws them out of the ring, and then ECW comes to the ring, and it's 10-5 in favor of ECW, because WWF didn't want the help of WCW. The mid-carders destroyed your top WCW talent. Then we see Team WWF getting attacked by ECW. They get thrown out of the ring, and WCW gets into the ring. They stare at ECW, and then they all high-five and get together. And to say that this lacked the emotion of the earlier angle would be an understatement, Way. This was so anticlimactic after the angle we saw earlier tonight. So we've got WCW and ECW working together. Then they perform moves with Shane McMahon doing commentary. And it was like I could feel tears forming in my eyes as I listened to Shane just do his fucking comedy routine here. As the invasion had it had reignited an hour ago, and they just threw a fucking bucket of water over it.
Check out your WWF. Oh yeah, Taz Mission, baby. It's over. Bye-bye.
My God.
One more. Feed him in. Feed it in. Let's go. Let's go. Watch it. Yeah. 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 One last one. Oh, here it comes.
Somebody
here it comes. Watch it. Watch it. Watch it. Get him. Get him. Get him. Oh, baby. I see it in 3D. 3D.
Oh. Not even an hour. It wasn't even given an hour to...
Oh. I'm like, how can this get any worse? And then Shane McMahon answered that question with this.
And I'm also personally responsible and privileged to introduce you to the new owner of ECW. I believe you know this person quite well. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Vince's daughter, Stephanie McMahon.
The new owner of WCW.
Yes, everyone. For you ECW fans out there, Stephanie McMahon was made the new owner of ECW. I think it would have been less offensive if the entire ECW locker room just pissed on every ECW fan.
Yeah.
This was the end, everyone.
This invasion has escalated to a sad and pathetic height, or low, if you will.
Stephanie McMahon is the owner of ECW. Shane McMahon is the owner of WCW. And we have a McMahon family feud as the centerpiece of the biggest storyline potentially ever.
I remember reading that same recap while I was out on vacation. I became so excited when I read midway through about the whole ECW thing. And then as I continued to read, I just remember my heart sinking. Stephanie McMahon.
To his credit, Jim Ross sold this as the biggest announcement in WWE history, ending the show with, "May God have mercy on our WWF souls." And goddamn did Jim Ross try to sell this, but I'm sorry. My interest was dead, and I think the invasion was officially done after this, in my opinion, because I don't know how anyone wanted to see Shane and Stephanie against Vince as the Invasion. I don't know what to say, folks. Why Paul Heyman was not just left alone to this and Shane McMahon could have been the silent owner, I don't know. But that was WWF Raw's War. And to recap, everybody, of how much booking was done on this one show, we got the first ever interpromotional match. We got the first ever WWF superstar challenging for the WCW title. We had ECW introduced. We then had WWF and WCW agree to team together. Then we had the first ever tri-branded match with all three promotions. Then we got two WCW and ECW groups joining together to form a super group. And then we had a new owner of ECW announced by the end of this night. All in one night, and somewhere in there, Rob Van Dam debuted.
Yeah. And we also had Shane McMahon, first of all, start off as a babyface. Then he turns on The Undertaker.
And became a heel.
Yes, and then he...
Became a babyface
again with Vince McMahon.
Who's a heel. Two heels made a babyface tonight.
And then he turns on Vince McMahon again.
He turned
four times.
Fuck.
In the span of 2 hours.
Like, my God. Like, how do you fuck this up to this degree? I guarantee you, Way, if you gave us a weekend to book this Raw, coming off that Tacoma show, Jesus Christ. I couldn't have done a worse job. Oh, I give this... I'm going to give this everyone a 3.8 out of 10. And that 3.8, 3.7 of it is for that angle, and 0.1 is for Kurt Angle and Booker T. And if anyone wants to argue with me being so fucking negative, then I want you to go back and ask, why have we never seen a Invasion DVD come out recapping this incredible money-making storyline? Because they fucked it up in 5 months. I'm going to get to this in our feedback here.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm sorry, everyone. I don't... The overall effect of these shows was killing. Was just... They might as well have burnt money on live television, because that's what they were doing. I don't give a fuck if there was a 3-minute solid match on this show. They were murdering this entire angle. It's like saying, well, the Titanic was the best ship ever created of its time. You got to give it some credit. No, it fucking sank. Like this angle.
Well, I personally will give it... I'll give it a 6 out of 10 because of that ECW...
It was an awesome angle. Alone. One of the best angles I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I choose to ignore and forget about the less memorable portions.
Yeah, that's the problem, Way. I always focus on the negative. That's what I remember. All right, let's get to the feedback, Way, because we have a ton here. We'll start off with Evan Harden, who writes in about the July 2nd Raw that we reviewed last week. I did not watch this show, but I do remember watching Off the Record with Michael Landsberg. He was interviewing Booker T, and I do remember them talking a little bit about the Booker T Buff Bagwell match on Raw. I do remember them talking about how the whole WCW product as a whole didn't work, which is why they switched to the WCW-ECW taking on the WWE angle. Again, I gotta point this out from last week. The whole angle was about the young talent from the Alliance being buried, while guys like the Hardy Boys, Big Show, Chris Jericho, and Undertaker were establishing their runs. Some were fresh, some were not. I guess the main thing coming out of this is that the motive for Vince was to send a message to the fans that WCW was nothing more than a second-rate company. I can't wait for this review next Tuesday, as this is a 4-day weekend for me. Well, we hope you enjoyed the review.
I mean, I don't think that was... ultimately, that might have been his intent. Yeah, he was going to put the WWF over no matter what.
But sure.
I think he really, really wanted to push that WCW brand.
I hope so. Like, I don't understand why you wouldn't. It's your brand. Who are you fooling at this point? You own them.
Yeah, and plus, you know, you could just tell that from how much they invested in the graphics and in the whole production side of it. They wouldn't just want to bury it.
They had huge plans for it. It was executed absolutely terribly.
Yes, and it was just so imbalanced. You had the most established stars in the business, like Chris Jericho, like Undertaker, like Steve Austin, against who? Who does WCW have?
Well, not to
mention...
Mark
Jindrak.
Look at the main event of this show, is that Vince McMahon felt so threatened that he threw out the guys that work on Sunday Night Heat to represent the WWF.
Yeah.
It's like, where were the Austins and the Angles, you know?
Well, you don't want to give that away right away. You gotta build up to that one.
Of course.
Nate Milton says, I love the show, but I had to take issue with your casual dismissal of Sting's promo on the final Nitro. Granted, it may not have resonated as much in Canada, but in the States, especially in the South, WCW was still relevant. It may not have been good anymore, but it was still being seen by a lot of eyeballs. Seeing Sting and Flair, WCW's greatest rivalry ever, step into the ring one last time was an awesome sight, even if the match was only so-so. And this promo made me mark out as a kid.
What was the promo?
It was when he had the bats just, dangling, and
yeah,
then
it was like a 10-second promo.
I forget what he said.
It was more like a throw to the break.
I didn't get the reference. Did he say there's some sort of a reference to?
I don't know how his promo translate with WCW not being relevant. I will disagree. I don't think they were very relevant at the end at all. They were doing, you know, they were still, their numbers were way better than Impact, but. Let's go on. Jay Hunter. Great stuff, John. Just listening to Bagwell now, it was such a huge shame that the biggest storyline in wrestling history was botched so badly. I didn't know that the next week was in Atlanta. I think that Vince booked WCW to fail knowingly and didn't have any intentions of making WCW a viable brand. It was a case of I'd rather hurt my own. See, more company and WCW's too, rather than make a ton of cash. Is there any chance of upping the Law episode that was after this Raw? I'd imagine it's July 8th, 2001 from the Law. I do not know if we have shows that go back that far, but I will check.
Lee Russell. Entertaining interview with Bagwell, John. I'm amazed you could last 20-plus minutes listening to him go on about how he was so close to having a job and being a star with the WWF without cracking up. That's about on the level with the delusional shit Sid was rambling about on that Law interview.
Ben Breezebaugh writes, Bagwell sounded like he has either taken way too many blows to the head or he was drunk or medicated. I thought it was kind of sad listening to that. Another reminder of the consequences of the wrestling business. I didn't think he sounded bad on that interview. I've heard worse.
Paul Willems, hey guys, great show as usual. I think it's a real shame that both WWF and WCW couldn't put all the egos and politics aside for 6 months to a year in the 90s and give the fans what they've always wanted, a real interpromotional feud. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how much of it was ego and how much of it was just, for me, like I said, the biggest problem was just the poor disbursement of talent between the two. And it was just, it just lacked purity. There, for a short time here during that ECW, what made the ECW portion so great was that it was pure and believable. You had Paul Heyman, the legitimate owner of ECW, control the top guys of that brand. Meanwhile, you had WCW led by Shane McMahon and being led by top stars like Sean O'Hare and Chuck Palumbo, guys you would never identify.
Why?
With WCW.
What would be the incentive for Shane and Stephanie to kill the WWF?
They're sick of their father. They want to be their own boss.
They would inherit that company.
Mm.
Why wouldn't they just try and attack Vince and kill him?
They couldn't wait. Because that would have been, they would have gone to jail for that.
All right. So they're going to go the route of, we'll hire other wrestlers.
We're going to beat you in a wrestling match.
We're going to use physical violence to take this company over. Andrew McMahon, wasn't Kurt Angle the mole? He turned on WWF at Invasion. No, I don't believe he did.
No.
I think Test joined the alliance because APA attacked him, so basically it was their own fault he joined.
Yeah, Andrew meant, and somebody corrected Andrew on the board, it was Austin that was that turned on WWF at Invasion.
We got another one here from Ben Breezebaugh. Do you want to read that one?
Yeah, it always rains in Winnipeg on Victoria Day. That's a fact. What better way to spend it than listening to Review Away and watching Raw from July 9th, 2001? I think that might have been the last Raw I watched for years. It was fantastic until it ended with Stephanie coming out to Triple H's old music. When WCW and ECW are supposed to have a historic coming together, I don't want to see three McMahons and hear Triple H's music.
Johnny Pickin. Hey, love the show, guys. Can Pollock be a bit more positive this week? I thought the Invasion was pretty good, but I might be the only one. Yeah, you probably were. Yeah. Recommend a review of Starrcade 89. And Daniel Power responded to Johnny, stating, you are indeed one of the very few, Johnny. It was good in a sense because it was still cool to see WCW against the WWF, but it was also nowhere near as good as it could have been if it hadn't been booked so atrociously. and then Jay Hunter on top of that. I think 0 out of 10 is truly very harsh. The show before the main event was at least a 6 out of 10, so even if the main event was 0, the show should have gotten a 4. John loves handing out sensationally low scores, though. I think you can be bitter retrospectively, but at the time, people were still pretty happy and optimistic, even if what was produced wasn't anything close to what you could have put out there. I am not going to award a show that destroyed an angle that had tons of money-making potential there, and that was the overall impact coming out of Tacoma, Washington. The mid-card didn't mean anything if your main angle bombed so atrociously that all your plans for your brand split were completely negated as a result of it. So I'm sorry. That to me is the definition of a 0 out of 10 show, yeah, in that you moved 10 steps backwards before you started.
Yeah. And I think that is the difference, is that you are judging these shows retrospectively, you know, thinking about what the consequences were of each episode. I guess for me and maybe some other people, I'm simply judging on whether or not I was entertained throughout watching this particular program.
And I'm a real, real negative person, so I do enforce that on this show.
Patrick McHugh, finally. Oh, is that? No, there's more, isn't there? Never mind. Okay, Patrick McHugh. Since you guys were talking about WWF New York, I thought I'd briefly describe my experiences when I went there in 2000. It was pretty crazy. It was crazy expensive, and without sounding like an old complainer, I was 10 at the time, it was too dark and too loud. The food was way overpriced, and it was something like $15 for a Coke.
What?
Out of one of those oversized novelty rock head cups. I still have the menu, actually. The place was so expensive that you could pay $30 to take one of these home.
What?
I will now admit that I stole it by putting it into my backpack. However, I now feel that this is justified for the fact that the Chris Jericho t-shirt I bought shrunk in the wash the very first time.
That's anyone I've talked to that actually went to that restaurant and said the same stuff. Of just, yeah. It was so expensive there. $15 for a
bucks,
Coke?
Huh? In a rock
$30 menu. That's like what a pay-per-view cost at the
$30
time.
Bucks for a piece of like paper? Like, what were these menus printed on?
Daniel Canataro finishes off our feedback. Just listened to the review away from last week, and it was an odd show to say the least. That was for sure. Anyways, looking at the wrestlers that you were naming off, such as S.A. Rios, Tajiri, Bull Buchanan, and even DDP, got me thinking, what the fuck happened to them? Like, where are they now? Even the deaths that was just in this show as well was brutal. Crash Holly, Mike Awesome, Test, and you got to even mention Benoit. To recap where all these people are, Diamond Dallas Page has his YRG yoga outfit that he's got on, and he's doing tons of promotion with that all over. He does a lot of guest speaking roles. He's got a movie coming out that he just recently did with Frankie Muniz. So he's very, very busy. Bull Buchanan is working, I believe, still in All Japan Pro Wrestling, where he's been working for years since leaving North America. Tajiri also working over there with a promotion called Smash, and he just started his own promotion over there in Japan as well. So he was working for Hustle as well at one point. And S.A. Rios, I don't know what he's up to right now. I don't hear his name at all in terms of doing any CMLL, AAA, or Perros del Mall. Nothing. Hmm. So if anyone knows where S.A. Rios is, Daniel Canataro would like to know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all our feedback, Wave, for this week. And we're going to finish off with going through the Photoshop contest. And we're going to just pull up the photos here, and we'll assess the photos here and which ones. God, there were quite a lot of them.
Yeah, this just kind of started. I mean, I think it might have been Daniel Powell.
People just started doing these, so then we made it a contest. I didn't realize we had so many here.
Yeah, we had a lot.
So I guess it starts right around
maybe
right
one.
There. Okay, so we've got
Brian Hillhouse
with the Triple H entrance with Way in an elf costume stating, that's retarded. Do you want to just rank these out of 10 as we go by?
All of these, there are a lot of them, but okay. Well, how are we going to even keep track?
I don't know.
Okay. Let's just pick out the ones that we particularly enjoy. I mean,
okay. I really like the Way Ting as Hornswoggle one. That one is pretty good.
Where was that one?
That's right there.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Well, yeah, we also have us as...
Yeah, I'm on top of Vince Russo's head, so I'm not happy about that. Way is Hornswoggle.
Yeah, this one.
Especially because the guy put the count on your shirt.
Yeah, from our birthday.
That's fantastic.
It's a great photo of me. Drunk.
So that was good.
And we also have
the
John
Mean
Pollock,
Street Posse.
Part of the Mean Street Posse. with Batista.
Why is Batista in the ring with the Mean Street Posse?
I don't know. It was just an angle of some sort. No, it's a photoshop of Batista.
Why? In there.
I don't get this at all.
See, it just...
That one actually looks real. I don't know. Maybe that was from something else. But that was from Daniel Power as well. And we also have Lance Storm doing the 5-second pose with John Pollock.
Yes. These look strangely odd.
You guys did a great job of finding the best shots of John Pollock.
It's the same picture, though.
Okay, but where was
it?
This,
is good.
Where was this shot of you with your mouth open? Where is that from?
I have no idea.
Money in the Bank, Pollock.
Yeah, Evan Bourne kicking me in the face. That spot looks about as painful as the interview I did with Evan Bourne a few months ago.
We have another Daniel Power creation.
Where I'm marrying Stephanie McMahon, and it would be me crying, I think. And then we have, this one's great, of me on sitting on top of Beth Phoenix with me photoshopped on Santino's head. That's a good one. Way as Nick Nolte. Yeah. That one's pretty solid.
I've got that same look on my face that Nick Nolte had for my birthday party.
And then it's part of Gary Busey's family.
What the fuck?
That's fucked up.
You guys are weird.
Daniel Power did some great ones here.
Oops.
Sorry. Oh, you went backwards.
Fuck.
I'm trying to go forward.
All right.
Virgil with oh my God, Chronic's over there as we're looking away from Virgil. That's okay.
Well, I don't get that. Why would you say Chronic's over there?
I guess Chronic's a bigger star than Virgil. Okay. I don't know what that's supposed to mean. Arn Anderson one.
Cat Spa. Okay.
this was well done. I mean, this probably took some time here.
So we have
Look like you're on Chris Hero's body. And then I'm just, I don't know whose body that is or what, but I'm being taken away by crows. And then Wei is saying, "You idiot, those aren't crows, they're called vultures." That joke has really stood the test of time, Wei.
And then a demotivational poster.
Yeah, I hate these. But yeah,
I don't get this one.
What is it?
It's a dog.
About to kill me?
No, it's a dog seemingly laughing at John. Putting his paw on John, and then the dog is saying, "You funny kid, you tell funny joke." I don't know. I don't get that. That was from something else, I suppose.
Pawned me.
This is
the Trailer Park Boys is really good. I like that one. Especially Scott Hall, that looks totally natural.
No. And I think this one is probably my pick for my favorite.
Oh, you really like this one.
I was very disturbed by this one.
This is the one of Sid... And me and Wei are like in an incubator.
And then Sid is on a mobile, like the baby mobile things.
Twinkle, twinkle, little star, where he gets angry as he starts singing. And I, you know, because I go from really calm to very happy when Sid gets angry here, as do you. So a lot of attention to detail. That was Brian Hillhouse. So
yes. Obviously referencing... the style of Sid's promo that John emulates so well.
Yes.
His loud, quiet, loud style of promo.
This is a really well thought out one.
Yeah.
So, Daniel Bauer and Brian Hillhouse definitely getting prizes for this contest because they did an exceptional job. I really liked, then we had a Law one here with us as DX and John Cena and Vince McMahon. I really like this, the SummerSlam 88 one. Look, Wei, there's a crow. Okay, the vulture. You didn't even need the captions here. I thought it was good enough just on these retard... Look at these bodies.
They got me with a headband. Like Hogan.
That is good. That's really good. Who was that?
That was Daniel Power. And then we have another poster.
Yeah, this was Pollock in the Bank match, some guy actually pointed out that's actually a TLC match. That's wrestling fans for you. Man, do they nitpick. The elimination match, yeah, that's okay.
We got it's us as
special, but it's okay. These ones random Scott Hall one, and then Michael Cole on one of Brian Danielson's dogs.
No cats.
And then the last couple here, we have the day kayfabe died for me. Someone put me in a noose. That's a little extreme. Everybody
put you in a noose with a photo of the Giant falling off of the Joe Louis Arena.
Oh yes.
And then here we go. Here we go. This is John's favorite part of this contest. One of many. Chris Benoit.
Yes. Morbid senses of humor that we have in our group here.
Yeah, yeah.
Including...
John Pollock will never escape Chris Benoit.
This one, I loved. Me handing Ultimate Warrior the Scott Putski Award. again by Daniel Power. I thought the Photoshop job of me in particular, both of these ones, didn't look too bad, other than my head there a little, but not bad at all, I thought.
Yeah.
Like, somebody, what a random picture to find of
somebody tag Scott Putski. Maybe I'll tag Scott Putski right now.
Do you have him on your thing?
Yeah, I'm going to tag him. Would he be offended?
I don't know. He's going to be like, who the fuck is this guy giving me an award?
Oh, I can't. Why can't I tag?
Yeah.
Anyway, well, let's go through this first. Yeah, you... Oh, fuck. This internet.
This is live, everybody.
Yeah.
As way as a MacBook. Not exactly a PC.
Our internet is... Why don't you fill time here? Why don't you...
Well, I want to thank everybody that went out of their way. We'll be coming up with some contests in the next couple of weeks. But as we reload up your way, do you have an idea of what we're going to review next week?
Yeah, I mean, I've been enjoying going through this entire Invasion angle, so why not take the next step and review the Invasion pay-per-view coming up at the end of this month?
I'm glad you picked the pay-per-view. I thought you were going to pick the next Raw, and I didn't really want to watch another Raw of this, but the pay-per-view should be a welcome difference to it, and it ended up being, business-wise, the high point of the Invasion angle, as that pay-per-view did very well.
Right. All right, back to the
contest. Let's continue
here.
Okay, George W. Bush. What is the story with this little kid? Did someone just tag it, and it looks like what Harley Race would if he was 5?
I don't understand.
Someone posted this week, I think on the Law Facebook page.
Yeah, I don't know.
But there's Way meeting George Bush.
Fuck.
And then there's a...
a blank screen as my internet continues to load.
Yes.
So how was your weekend, John?
It was pretty good.
What'd you do?
I went to Dave and Buster's on Saturday night. I played some video games there and basketball. And there's this game where you have to hit a button, and you've got to come between like 996 and 1,002 to win like 40 tickets, and it's really hard.
Did you? How close did you come?
I got like 992, I think, on one. So I was close.
Wow.
I didn't quite win it.
Shit, wow. That's
on Friday night, I went out to this club downtown with Jason Agnew, and this somewhat heavy-set woman came up to us and asked us if we had a light for her cigarette. Because Kings of Leon was playing, and she said, I love smoking to this song.
What, in the club?
In the club. Oh. Didn't want to point out that it was illegal in Ontario, but nonetheless, she then got her cigarette lit, and she's smoking a cigarette, and then in her wisdom decided to climb onto a table, and it was one of those circle tables that has the middle stand.
Yeah, that's stupid.
And Jay was just like, she's going to fall. And then she started dancing, and the table tipped, and she fell right onto the ground. It was awesome. I laughed so hard. Wish we had a camera. Then we go some comic book captions here of a TNA Impact with a bunch of monkeys and Vince Russo, with Way asking me if it's ironic, and Vince Russo saying, I have to be honest with you, Mr. Giggles, the poop on the pool mat should be in segment 3, not 5. And me saying, no way, ugh, I hate this company.
Yeah, and it's because it's not ironic.
Nope.
But it is...
What else? Then we have Dixie Carter and Hulk Hogan with Way saying, Dixie, Daniel's contract seems to be up in a few. We don't need him, brother. Not when we have Abyss, myself, spelt incorrectly, Flair, Sting, myself, spelt properly, Nash, myself, Abyss, Flair, myself, Jarrett, Sting, and me saying, I hate this friggin' company.
I like this one. I like this one because Mark Cardoso happened to find a photo of me in front of a camera.
Yeah, this was good.
With a TV headset on, so I looked just like
a TV production
assistant handing a script to Dixie. And Hogan, what Hogan says is funny. Oh, now my other favorite.
This is horrible.
John Pollock in Groundhog Day. Featuring a photo of John Pollock photoshopped in where Bill Murray is on that poster. And then a huge photo of Chris Benoit right next to him. And the caption reads, a romantic comedy where every review contains Chris Benoit.
That's from Jay Hunter. And I'm sorry, I'm not going to award Chris Benoit humor on this show.
Yeah, John texted me.
We have standards.
Not very happy. Another Chris Benoit one. Should we talk about these?
This one took a lot of time, clearly. This is just, I don't know, you've got to have a certain sense of humor to
it. I'll talk about it because John is clearly uncomfortable. This is John Pollock
on a desert island trapped, and he receives a message in a bottle, and then he pulls out the message, and it is a photo of Chris Benoit, and then John Pollock is angry.
Yes, this is a...
Yeah. Guys, you really... not funny.
Then we have the Four Horsemen as the Law, where my head is on the body of Chris Benoit.
Are you sure? Yeah, it is. That is sick. Sick.
These guys are fucked up.
We have one more.
Resident Evil.
We won't even talk about that one.
And then we got Sting, whose face is on the body of Sting. And songs to be sung at the Impact Zone. I laughed at this one today.
A good one.
Way as the Warlord.
Me as the Warlord. The Waylord.
The Waylord.
The Waylord.
And then Scott Hall Scott on Jake Hall. Roberts' body.
Yeah, and then we have John presenting George W. Bush with... never mind. Let's not talk about that.
Jesus Christ.
Finally, we have Daniel Power's friend photoshopping a photo of him sticking his head up the Law's ass.
And then it says Daniel Pewter or Daniel Power. You decide.
All right. All right. So what are your choices?
I'm going to send out prizes to Brian Hillhouse and Daniel Power. They were the ones. And we'll send one to Mark Cardoso as well. So those three are our prize winners. We'll be contacting you to get your information. So thanks to most of you for your contributions to this Photoshop contest, everybody. If you want to keep them going, by all means, and if one really sticks out, we'll definitely throw a prize your way, because these are rather entertaining, some of these Photoshops. So that will bring an end to a review away for this week. Next week we will review the July 2001 Invasion pay-per-view. Find out what all this shit on TV was building towards and what the big climactic moment was, because that really was the climax of this angle, which unfortunately went another 4 months after that pay-per-view.
And this one's a bit more accessible for all you guys, so if you do end up watching it, please send us your feedback, usually by the Thursday. By Thursday is when we record.
Yeah, Thursday is cutoff day, everybody. Yeah,
Thursday at noon.
And we look forward to your feedback. As always, try and... if you know any wrestling fans, any friends that might be interested, get them to join our Facebook group. We're hoping to hit 800 at some point.
Yeah, it's a slow climb, but I mean...
That we're in the... after 700, it's, one by one, we're trying to grow. So it's reviewaway.com, R-E-V-I-E-W-A-W-A-I.com. You can leave all your feedback there. And going out way, I recently got a CD player in my car, and I was cleaning out my old CD collection, and I found a CD I had from way, way back, and it was Brandvan. And I loved Brandvan I was younger. They were one of my favorite groups.
I actually heard Drinking in L.A. come play out of a car yesterday.
Really?
Yeah.
You sure it wasn't mine? I was playing in my car yesterday, actually.
I don't think it was yours.
Anyway, I loved that song so much that when I went to L.A. this year, I went onto Hollywood Boulevard, and I specifically turned on that song to listen to. But nonetheless, I found the CD, and I've been listening to it nonstop the last 3 days. So I want to go out with one of their lesser-known songs entitled Problems, which perfectly characterizes the booking of this Invasion angle.
Does it? Nothing.